So I left you with two questions yesterday to think about. We talked about the fact that there's a pretty fundamental machlokas, which affects itself, but affects the whole concept of Hilchos Shechita, as to why is it that Shechitas Akum is no good. Rabbi Rapp often jokes, it sounds like the reference to cannibalism. It's not what we're talking about. We're talking about Shechita performed by a Akum. A lot of cannibalism, Shechitas Katan, Shechitas Kusi, Shechitas Nasi, the whole, so none of that really is cannibalism, but Shechita performed by these individuals. So why is it that Shechitas Akum is no good? So it's a pretty fundamental machlokas. Again, it affects our whole understanding of Shechita, because according to the Rambam, it's a specific issue with the practitioner of idolatry, even though it's not necessarily limited to the practitioner of idolatry, but it comes from that, and he bases it on the pasuk in Shmos, v'kar lecha, v'achaltem b'zivcha. So it sounds like, theoretically, as far as shechita is concerned, the shechita of an akum could have been good, except that the Torah actively negated it because of that and made it essentially into nothing.
He calls it a chiddush? It's an unfinished Torah?
Would you call it, would he, meaning, does he use language?
He learns it from Gzeir Sekasa that
right.
Shechita would be, like, Shechita is okay, but we have a pasuk that says that.
Yeah, I guess the way to put it, but essentially what we want to understand from that is that there isn't anything in Hilchos Shechita that requires anything, according to this position, that any party in the world could perform Shechita, but because of the additional affirmative concern of idolatry, so the Torah itself ruled it out, having an impact, therefore, of negating the Shechita, so it's no better than a Nevela, but it's because of something imposed onto the situation. While according to the Rush and Tosfos, based on a Tosefta, although the Tosefta doesn't have the exact language they use, there is a lack in proper Shechita if it's performed by an Akum, because there is this mysterious standard of a Bar Zvicha. And that impacts a lot of things. The Taz, if you had a chance to take a look at it, the Taz on the Shulchan Aruch tries to figure out what nafkaminas might be between the two. And the Taz writes a couple of possibilities. One is if you have somebody who is a Ger Toshav. Let's say the Ger Toshav is not an Oved Avodah Zarah at all, but has not entered into Klal Yisrael, so therefore it's not going to be considered a Bar Zvicha, presumably, but maybe is not even a Akum in any sense of the word. Or maybe at least on a level of Torah would be acceptable. Another nafkamina he suggests.
He's okay for, he would be okay for the Rambam, but not okay for the...
Correct. Right. Another nafkamina he suggests, and this goes to our attempts to define Bar Zvicha, and here we'll have to figure out exactly how to translate this. He says, what if you have a Yisrael that is not a Mummer, not L'te'avon or L'hachis, but the way he phrased it, Eino Choshesh L'Shechita. How are we going to translate that? I guess he doesn't care about Shechita. But he's not a Mummer L'te'avon, just he's not somebody who pays attention to Shechita, however you want to understand that. So he suggests that such a person wouldn't be a Bar Zvicha. So he wouldn't be an Akum for the Rambam standards, but for the Rush, he wouldn't be a Bar Zvicha. Now that's a very vague statement because, again, we don't even know yet how to define Bar Zvicha. So we also don't really know how to define Eino Choshesh L'Shechita as opposed to saying he's a Mummer L'Te'avon. So it's very vague to know what to do with that, but that's one of the things the Taz puts on the table. Right?
I'm wondering if we can maybe put that the Rambam, the Shitasa, with an earlier Rambam, we saw that if a person forgets to make a bracha, b'im b'mizid b'im b'shogig, a person that's koshish for shvita, maybe he's the kind of person that's b'mizid not making a bracha.
But even if somebody b'mizid doesn't make a bracha, he's still yotze.
Right, but over here the Rambam says that he's not a over the Avodah Zarah, so he would be kosher for shvita.
Right.
So it's just like fit.
Uh-huh, but for different reasons. I mean, the bracha is not ma'akev. I think what you're saying is that the bracha we know is not ma'akev anyway, but since he describes somebody who's amazed at not making a bracha, so how would somebody do that? Why would they intention not make a bracha? It must be that they don't care about the whole mitzvah, and therefore saying it's a raya that the Rambam would hold, that somebody who doesn't care about the mitzvah is still yotzer, or shechita is still effective, and that's essentially what the Taz is attributing to him.
An ambitious raya.
Okay, I hear it. Yes,
based off this chakira of the Rambam, say that a machine would be
So a machine, actually, the Gemara is going to talk about it in a separate, it's got other issues on top of it. But we saw that the Tosefta did say that Nizbucha Me'aleh is no good. But of course, the status of a machine as far as it being considered a human action is an issue that affects a lot of different questions on halacha. And it is going to be matzah for sure and tzitzis and things like that. But it's also, we'll see, it's going to be a pretty explicit sugya in chulin. So God willing, we will get to that. There's fantastic stuff coming up in terms of the implications for all kinds of different areas of halacha. So, exciting action. So, with this machlokes, so as we said, it's important for figuring out the parameters of akum, but also it reflects on the whole masechta, reflects on the whole Mishnah, because what is the standard of a bar zvicha? And so I left you with two questions to consider. We'll see if we get to do both of them in the next few minutes, but hopefully we'll do at least one of them. There seems to be two stiras. If we try to figure out bar zvicha, so there are two sets of apparent contradictions. Because a katan, we find, is at least theoretically acceptable. If he's gadol omed al gabav, if he has an adult who is supervising him, or someone can vouch for what happened, so his shechita is going to work. So if that's the case, apparently he is a bar zvicha. So the two contradictions that we have is, how come he's a bar zvicha if he's not chayiv in mitzvos, and the akum isn't? If we want to define it as whether you're chayiv or not, katan's not chayiv in mitzvos. And to make that point stronger, we find that a very similar concept indeed sees a katan as out of the picture, and that is regarding tefillin and issues like that. So we find that a katan is not called a bar kshira, apparently because he's not chayiv in mitzvos. And therefore, a katan cannot participate in the creation of the tefillin, even when he's the gil chinuch, even when he is otherwise in the parsha, somewhat of a pun intended, he's not able to create tefillin. So it sounds like it's a pretty parallel concept, bar kshira, bar zvicha, sounds like it should be guided by similar kinds of ideas, and there we find the katan excluded. So it's a kind of a double steer. Why is the katan good for here as opposed to the akum, and why is the katan good for shechita as opposed to for tefillin? Sam, which issue would you like?
I was going to ask you to repeat the first steer.
Okay, so let's try to take one at a time. We'll try to do the akum one first. Yes, later.
Would there be some sort of a difference between an ase and a los ase?
Okay, what do you want to do with that?
What I was going to say is that, like there's the whole concept of when he cuts and can eat nevelos.
Excellent. Okay, keep going, yeah.
And generally, we don't want that to happen.
Okay, right, well put.
Right. Because there's a whole thing about, if he takes the nevel himself or whatever, and he eats it, would we stop him necessarily, or never based on us to stop him?
Okay. Okay.
Versus with tefillin's an assay.
You're on a good
track. It's something that you're specifically chayev to do versus something you're not supposed to do, which would be eating velos. So if you're
okay, so let's consider that. And I think probably with our time, we'll probably get to deal with the akum issue we're addressing here. Probably the other steer we may have to leave for Monday. But let's try to address these possibilities, especially considering what Levi just said. So what you're alerting us to is we have to assume, probably, that it's not about chiyuv in a positive mitzvah here. Because if a katan is eligible for shechita, and he's clearly not chayiv in positive mitzvos, so we have to find some other reason why he's connected.
Can you repeat the point?
Well, if we say that bar zvicha means you are chayiv in the mitzvah of shechita, in the positive mitzvah of shechita, so we know that a katan isn't. So, in trying to define what this phrase means, it doesn't seem like it can mean that you are chayiv in the positive mitzvah of shechita. Now, parenthetically, in the context of kshira, it does sound like it means that. So that's the steer we'll have to come to afterwards. But at least without worrying about kshira, if we're going to bring the katan into zvicha, it can't be that he's chayiv in the positive mitzvah. That's the standard. So we could say that it's broader. Maybe it means that he's somehow affected by shechita, that shechita at least has to have some impact on his life halachically. Rabbi Chanan Wasserman, in his sefer on Yevamos, has, it's remembered as a sefer on Chulin also, we should take a look at it. His sefer on Yevamos, if you're familiar with the basic structure of Rabbi Chanan Wasserman's svarim, so you know how you drive in a parkway and park in a driveway, so his two most well-known svarim are kind of like that also, is the Kovet Shiurim and the Kovet Tzaharis. So the Kovet Shiurim is little Haris, and the Kovet Tzaharis is very long, elaborate Shiurim. I don't know why. But, so the Kovet Shiurim is on lots of Masechtas, and the Kovet Tzaharis is his most elaborate Sefer. A Sefer that's all on Yevamos and has much longer essays. So in the Kovet Tzaharis and Yevamos, he talks about this, and he notes that somebody who shechts an animal, even if it's, let's say, a treifa, so, as we've discussed, it takes it away from the status of nevela. And nevela conveys tumah. So that could have affected a katan. A katan is not going to be subject to the concerns of tumah because of the shechita. So maybe the shechita is applicable to him for that reason. But others suggest something more along the lines of what Levi said. So if you look at the Shach has a comment. You should try to really take a look at it afterwards today if you can. The Shach is in Siman Sifkat and Chav Zayin, in Siman Aleph in Yeridei. And it's also discussed by the Noda Bihuda. The Noda Bihuda has a tshuva about it, which is in Tinyana Arachayim Siman Aleph. And the Shach takes it as a given, and he brings it kind of agav in a different discussion, that a katan is bar zvicha because he's not allowed to eat nevelos. And that's what Levi was referring to. There is a whole discussion in the Gemara whether we say katan ochel nevelos or not, that even though we know that a child is not subject to commandments, and is not subject to onshin, but nonetheless, as a parent or as a society in the form of Beis Din, should we allow children to eat or to be fed non-kosher food? So our assumption is that not. Although the parameters are subject to a lot of discussion. And that's actually a sugya in Yevamos, and that's why Rabbi Chanan talks about it over there in the Kovet Tzaharis. Hi.
Why isn't this running against anyone that holds the mitzvah saseh?
Okay, so hold on to that thought for a second. It's a very good question. So that issue, if we assume that there is a din of not allowing a katan to eat nevelos, and there is a lot of discussion exactly what the parameters are, and also whether it's d'oraisa or the rabbanan in all cases, that's an important discussion. It has many nafkaminas lahalacha. This comes up a lot for all kinds of situations. Maybe we could talk about Yom Kippur times. The big Shiloh White is that we feed children on Yom Kippur because it's an Issur D'oraisa for adults to eat. They shouldn't be allowed to feed food to the children. Spoiler alert, feed little children on Yom Kippur. But the lumdus of why is a discussion. So there's a lot to say about that. It's a fascinating sugya by itself. It's worth finding time to discuss in more detail at a different point. But assuming that there is an Isser D'oraisa to feed ketanim non-shechted food, so then perhaps that accounts for why he's considered to be a bar zvicha. Hi.
But in terms of who we consider a bar zvicha, and who we don't consider a bar zvicha, that logic align with everybody? If we're saying that there's certain types of Jews
that might not be considered by Zvi.
Yeah.
No, so that's, it probably doesn't. That's what we've right. seen a lot of ambiguity as
right.
to what it means. So some of these definitions, like whatever Eino Choshesh L'Shechita means,
right.
so if we're saying that they're subject to the Isser, then it should be broader, presumably.
Right.
Right? And it should include all Jews. But there's a lot that's undefined here, that
right.
maybe if somebody has declared they don't care about the Isser, even though we don't agree with them, you know, even though we haven't actually released them from the Isser, maybe that's also an act called the Bar Zvicha. So we don't have clear parameters for that, so there's a lot to wonder as far as that's concerned.
Is it possible that the Isser to feed Katana Nevelis just ties into something more fundamental about, like, eating non-kosher food in general, that it's something, like, metaphysically harmful or something?
We do have such an idea, which has a lot of applications. And we believe that non-kosher food is metamte misalev, you know, whatever that means. It has a negative spiritual impact. And we're also told that, therefore, even when defeating very young babies, so let's say if there was a non-Jewish woman who's given the task to nurse a young baby, so she's not supposed to eat non-kosher food because there is such a concept that it has some unique damaging qualities to it, which is itself a fascinating topic to explore. So there's a lot that could be said about that. It's not clear that the halachic principle of not feeding ketanim isurim is based on that, because the assumption is we also tie it into a lot of other things. Although, it's not out of the question. Certainly, as a concept, the metaphysical issue you're pointing out, there's certainly many sources in Chazal that do express such a concept. The only question is, how much are they related? So, if we assume that this is the issue, so, you know, we said we're going to talk about the Bar Kshira topic next time, but it may relate to that. It may simply be that Bar Kshira and Bar Zvicha are just different, despite the fact that they sound similar. But if Kshira is focused on a mitzvah saseh, so then it's going to have one set of parameters, while if Shechita is focused on something negative, it may have a different set of parameters, because that may be a more inclusive reality. But there is a very fascinating comment. Rav Nosson Gestetner, Zichrono Livracha, is that our first time this year?
Yeah.
Okay, so I tend to quote him pretty often. I guess it's the first time he's made it into the conversation. So he has a couple of interesting discussions about this machlokas. But one of them is in his sefer on Chulin, the sefer called Nosson Pirio Maseches Chulin, where he has a discussion about this whole issue of Shechitas Akum. And he gets into this question, and he makes the following very fascinating observation. That if we say that the whole factor here is kad nochel nevelos, that we don't want to feed non-kosher food to a katan. So he suggests the following, and this is very elegant, whether or not it's 100% pashut pshat, I have to think about, but it's certainly very elegant. It says that the Magen Avraham writes in Hilchos Shabbos that we only would have such a concept of not feeding a katan something prohibited if it is a factor of an iser lav. If it's only a mitzvah saseh, we wouldn't have this. This comes up, by the way, every Friday night. That's why it's there in that Magen Avraham, because one of the questions that the Sfarim discuss is Friday night in a lot of shuls. Have a practice of making kiddush in shul. Fascinating topic for a different discussion. But when they make kiddush in shul, so it's a question, how do you drink the wine? Because the person making kiddush is generally not being yotzei kiddush at that time, because it's not kiddush makum suda. So if he's not being yotzei kiddush, so what do you do with the wine? He doesn't have a head to drink the wine. So the widespread practice is to find a katan who's in shul, and to allow him to drink from the wine. Some suggest that the whole purpose of kiddush and shul is a chinuch kind of idea. It's a fascinating topic in of itself. So, as far as I'm asking, the Shulchan Aruch asks, we're not allowed to give children things that adults can't eat. So if adults are not allowed to drink because they're not yotzei kiddush, so how can you allow the katan to drink? So there are many approaches. You could probably guess what some answers to that question might be. But one approach is that it's not an isser to drink the wine or to eat before kiddush. It's essentially a bittul aseh. You have to make kiddush first and then eat only under those circumstances. So if it's not an isser, so then maybe this whole concept doesn't apply. So it says in Nosson Pirio, maybe this explains the Rambam, right, that we discussed from day one. That how does the Rambam relate to Shechita? calls it a mitzvah sase. So therefore, a katan is not going to be allowed to eat non-shechted meat, no matter what, because it's going to have lo sase's connected to it. It's going to be a nevela or Avraham Anachai or whatever it is. But the mitzvah of shechita, according to the Rambam, is not relevant to the katan. Because the mitzvah of shechita is only a aseh, or is manifested as an aseh. So the fact that the katan is not eating this non-shechted meat does not connect him at all to the concept of shechita. And therefore, the Rambam's going to have a problem. That if we have a standard of bar zvicha that requires you to be subject to the mitzvah of shechita, at least on some level, it's going to be a problem because the katan is not subject to shechita at all. So Mamela, the Rambam, is going to have an issue acknowledging a concept of bar zvicha. So it works for the Rambam l'shitaso because the Rambam doesn't seem to have a concept of bar zvicha. This whole kasha doesn't get off the ground for the Rambam. Right? This kasha is only for the Rosh and Tosfos. But according to the Rambam, the psul of Akum is coming from a different place.
Considering the Rosh and Tosfos are saying that they wouldn't necessarily call it mitzvah sase.
And we know that already, right? Because we saw Tosfos in Shavuos, so we saw Tosfos in Beitza. So that's part of the elegance here. That he goes on to say that we know the shitas of Tosfos that we've seen is that shechita is a lav haba michal asay. So it works out, l'shitaso. So again, it's a little bit of a pilpul, but it's very elegant, right? That if you assume that shechita manifests itself as a lav, so then keeping ketanim away from eating non-shechted meat would be a function of shechita also. So therefore they could be included within shechita, and they could be considered a bar zvicha. So the position of the Rosh and Tosfos l'shitasam, that they believe that the mitzvah of shechita is applicable to a kadin, and therefore they are a bar zvicha, as opposed to an akum. So that all works well. Well, according to the Rambam, shechita is a mitzvah saseh. It's not going to have any relevance to the katan at all. And since we know that a katan could be acceptable for shechita, it must be that bar zvicha is not a consideration. And shechita sakum needs another source.
Can you just repeat his point on the Rosh?
Absolutely. But you see, it's very elegant the way this all comes together. So I'm going to recap what we said, and then I am going to run out the door to my next thing. So, and again, our agenda is, God willing, next time to pick up on the bar kshira issue and go from there and maybe add a few more points and segue from that into the next issue. But just we'll recap and hopefully address all your points. So we dealt with the following concerning the machlokas between the Rambam and Tosfos and the Rosh as to what the psul of Akum is. The Rambam saying it's because of the concern of his Avodah Zarah, and the Rosh and Tosfos saying there's a bar zvicha standard that the Rambam doesn't seem to acknowledge. So the Taz mentioned two possible nafkaminas. One is that if I have a ger tosha, maybe it would be okay for the Rambam, but not be a bar zvicha. And if you have somebody who's eino choshish l'shchita, so maybe he would not be considered a bar zvicha, but as far as the Rambam is not an Ovid of a Lazar. So working from that, so we dealt with two steerers. We put two steerers on the table. We only dealt with one of them, is that if there is a bar zvicha standard, so then, how come a katan is a bar zvicha? He's not chayiv in mitzvos. And second steer, especially because we know in the context of tefillin, he's not considered to be a bar kshira. So this question is primarily for those who have a concept of bar zvicha, the Rosh and Tosfos. The Rambam doesn't have to be bothered by this. So we mentioned a couple of approaches. How could a katan be called a bar zvicha if he's not chayiv in mitzvos? So we mentioned Rabbi Chanan, that he's subject to Tumas Nevela, so Shechita will save him from Tumas Nevela. And then we mentioned the approach that, more directly, that he's not allowed to eat Nevela, so it's relevant to him for that. He's not going to be allowed to eat without the Shechita. And this is a position that the Shach mentions Derech Agav, the Noda Behuda explains his words a little bit more. Many others discuss this. And then we mentioned the elegant approach of the Nas Imperio, that maybe this works out L'Shitaso. because the Magen Avraham posits that this iser only works if there is a lo saseh that's active here rather than a mitzvah saseh. So according to the Rambam, it isn't a lo saseh, it's a mitzvah saseh. So the cotton's issues here are not coming from Shechita, it's coming from Neveila, it's coming from Eivor Min HaChai, but the cotton really is not relevant to Shechita at all. So if you need a Bar Zvicha standard, it's very hard for the cotton to be defined that way. But the Rambam l'shitaso, there is no Bar Zvicha standard. And that's how, at least part of this, many other Svarim say also, or Tzipei Sechrank, and the Haris, they had printed from him on Yeridea, makes that point at least, that according to the Rambam, the fact that a cotton is kosher shows him that there's no Bar Zvicha standard. Because essentially, the Rambam doesn't have a way to make the cotton into a Bar Zvicha. While according to Tosfos, perhaps it's L'shitasam, because Tosfos we saw, Tosfos and Shuas and Tosfos and Beitza, that they define Shechita as a lav, lav haba michlal aseh, and therefore it's going to indeed include cotton and Shechita, and the fact that he can't eat is not going to stop him, is going to basically make him into a Bar Zvicha. So it'll work out L'shitasam, a very nice point. Should mention that this might still be reconcilable with a Magen Avraham that we mentioned, because you might say, all right, so Kiddush, that's a lava ba michal aseh, and so is this. So how come we should say that a cotton can drink the Kiddush wine but can't eat, and it's still considered to be shechita? That's still different, though, because when we say that there is a iser, lava ba'al mechal aseh, when it comes to shechita, we're saying that the Torah is giving you a message that non-shechted food is not kosher. So it's telling you what is kosher and telling you that everything outside of that is non-kosher. So it's saying in a positive way that the non-kosher food is bad. In the context of Kiddush Friday night, we really shouldn't call it even a lava ba'al mechal aseh. It's basically a bitul aseh. We're saying the food is completely neutral. The food has nothing wrong with it. It's that you need to make Kiddush first. So the fact that you didn't make Kiddush first, that's not going to change the nature of this wine, and it's not going to make it problematic for the child. And you could probably relate to the Svara that many poskim assume in terms of this Isser, that if the food is the same, so this whole issue is presumably related to Chinuch. So you don't have to worry that when this child grows up, he's going to say, oh, I got so addicted to the taste of wine before Kiddush, I'm going to always have wine before Kiddush. But if you give him pork, or if you give him nevelas all the time, so then he'll be trained to eat nevelas. That's going to be something that's going to impact his life as an adult. So we could certainly see a chiluk. And also to Yossi's point, the idea that there's a metaphysical impact. So presumably the metaphysical impact is attached to that which is inherently problematic. But that which is only an issue because you need to do something else first, and something doesn't connect to this item at all, so it's hard to say that the wine is spiritually damaging when you just haven't made Kiddush beforehand. So those are some thoughts. You all should have a wonderful Shabbos. I apologize for running out after this half-assed schedule. God willing, I'll see you on Monday. I look forward to taking this discussion further. All right, have a great Shabbos.